Realities. My name is Alan Steinfeld, and like always, this program is an exploration into the unknown, into what's possible. And tonight's guest is very much a part of creating a future that we need on this planet. Her name is Carol Rosen, and she is creating a peace treaty for outer space and a lot more. Welcome, Carol, to the program.
Thank you so much, Alan. Great to be here.
I think it's important that you can first outline what it is that you propose for the world and the nine countries you've targeted that you want to see happen here. Can you outline that?
Yes, thank you. Yes, I've been working with some incredible men I'll tell you about to co-author the Outer Space Security and Development Treaty. But really what this is a way out of the economic, security, social issues, environmental issues, mess that we're in on the planet by literally putting a lid on the war machine and allowing that whole military industrial lab, university, intelligence community, NASA and other international space agencies, governments complex to transform easily by simply banning all space-based weapons. That's where we're headed right now. And it's all about domination and control, power. We all know that whole issue, why we're heading into different wars one after another. And we have one small moment in history when we can get a ban on all space-based weapons. But this treaty is also very unusual because it tells a story, and it's the first ever to acknowledge the indigenous cultures and the cosmos cultures. So it's very complex and yet simple, a simple step. And all we have to do is get nine leaders of countries, designated signatories, to sign and ratify this treaty, and we're done. It's possible for us, the people, to get this done, and it will be an actual law, a world law.
But why would the industrial military complex give up their position? First of all, because they're so in control, and why would they? Why would any of them accept this type of treaty?
Well, great question. Actually, there have been a number of treaties, space treaties, and this one includes the best of the wording and the purpose, the intention of the other treaties as well, including the Outer Space Treaty of 67, but it updates it all and bans weapons from being placed on celestial bodies and craft. The answer to your question is also complex, but the simple versions are, for one, there is no way for us to survive as a human species on this planet, and more people are becoming aware of this, including in the complex, which I come out of. I was the first woman corporate manager of an aerospace defense company, space and missile defense consultant, and I learned a lot about military strategy and also how the aerospace defense industries function. And what they really want to do is the people in the military create a security system. Most of the people are really good. Most of them don't want to have blood and guts spilled of their own or anybody else's. They want to provide service. And the corporations, they want a profit and to create jobs. And they want exciting technologies and products and services. And the people who are social-minded and environmental-minded want to get those products and services and the jobs, too, and training programs, new training programs, applied to solving what most people now know who are educated are extremely urgent problems on this planet, human needs, the list of them, the environmental needs, climate, all of that, those needs, and new energy needs. And there is technology that's available to solve these urgent and also the potential problems that are now existing and will be created if we don't solve these problems. And there's a lot of disease, a lot of poverty. People are out in the streets all over the world. And there's a new way. So it leads to my other conclusion, having worked in that revolving door game, that there is another way to provide security, a stimulated economy with those jobs and profits. And it is to transform these industries and the whole complex into one worthy of the space age in which we live, where we also And again, people in the industries know about this, although many of them are either in denial, the lower levels maybe don't know, some of the higher levels don't know, that we are not alone in the universe. There have been very high-level credentialed people that have gone public with the truth about the off-planet cultures, the visitors, and so on, who have tremendous information and technologies to share with us, including about healing, advanced communication techniques. These industries, and especially around the world, we're seeing more interest than even in the United States, unfortunately, who want to know about the highest forms of technology and consciousness that can be applied to their peoples. So there's a very important self-interest and corporate interest involved in the answer to your question. Why would they? It's not giving up their power. It's, in fact, enhancing it, but it's enhancing it at a level that reaches a higher level of consciousness. And the more people are educated, the more evolved we get in that form of consciousness. So there are more and more people in the complex who are starting to see this. We're reaching more into the global world than we are in the United States, where unfortunately there seems to be a lot of, I'll call it, disappointment in the decisions that are being made here. But around the world, there is quite a reception to this concept of ending wars and the suffering and destruction that goes with it. So with all of that that I just mentioned, there's an enormous amount of potential for ending the war game all over the world and transforming it. That's in everybody's best interest. But in the past, we were talking about swords to plowshares, more of an earthbound perspective. Now that we have this incredible technology that's showing us universes and these people who are coming out saying we really are not alone and they're peaceful entities coming in that will share with us as long as we don't set off a nuclear bomb or aim weapons at them, continue to shoot them down and try to reverse engineer and all of that. We have the potential now of those decision makers who can grasp this concept of ending wars and transforming it to benefit all the sacred life on this planet. Those leaders
I'm totally in agreement with you that this is what has to happen. We have to end wars. I do think, you know, it's been reported that there's been lots of UFOs over nuclear missile silos that were turned off. It seems like they would never let it happen that there could be weapons or potential weapons because they've already demonstrated their superior technology in both U.S. and Russian missiles, you know, disconnecting them. Right? You've heard that, haven't you?
Oh, yes, of course. I was a witness in the Disclosure Project that was coordinated by Dr. Stephen Greer. Many of your listeners probably know about that. If they don't, they can go to disclosureproject.org and they can go to our website, peaceandspace.com. It's being developed now in relation to this treaty, and we'll have links to some of these very important press conferences. There was another one that was military people in a press conference, all of these at the National Press Club in Washington, D.C., very prestigious. And yes, these testimonies confirmed that, as you're saying, there are craft that have come over and displayed what they're capable of doing. And if they were coming to steal our resources or control us or take our ovaries, whatever people are afraid of, you know, this is an ego and fear-based culture. We're carefully taught to fear, especially. That's a good driving force for the old paradigm game. So we know that they're peaceful entities. There's no one of intelligence that I know who would say anything else. And that's, to me, the important part of the testimonies, even including the fact that they're confirming that this is a reality. And for me, coming out of the aerospace defense industry, I think one of the most important factors to get through is that to people and to decision makers is that they're not hostile entities. They have evolved in the cosmos, and now it's our turn. And either we do or we don't, but those who have a chance to make a real difference in helping to get this treaty signed. And what we're planning on doing is going to the nine world leaders. We're going to do an end run around the usual process, and we can do it to get a treaty signed into law. And that's what we want to get funding for, by the way. If any of your listeners can donate, please go to peaceandspace.com, because this is the time, the only time in history when we can get this treaty signed. And Dr. Scott Jones, who founded the Peace and Emergency Action Coalition for the Earth, Peace Inc., and he gave us a 501c3. Scott Jones, some people here may know, he co-founded the Human Potential Foundation. And he was also one of the highest level people involved in the intelligence collection, provided intelligence support to defense attachés throughout Southeast Asia, the Middle East, North Africa. I met him when he was the chief advisor to Senator Claiborne Pell, who had invited me to testify before the Senate Armed Services Committee about this issue back in the early 80s. And also, just to let you know, Commander Will Miller will also go on this trip with me to the nine world leaders. And Commander Will Miller is a former Navy officer, decorated Vietnam vet, educator, advisor, futurist. He was a former briefer to the U.S. commanders in chief, the DOD, Department of Defense, the White House staff, U.S. Space Command. He's an amazing man, a senior analyst. And in his world, he worked on counter threat planning, directed energy weapons, space systems, war fightings. These people are extremely experienced. And if it's okay with you, I'll tell you about the other couple of men that were are co-authors of this treaty, including Dr. Scott Jones, Commander Will Miller. Abe Krieger was 37 years in Boeing as business development executive and played a key role in establishing the Russian Space Cooperation Program, the space station, and also was the director of new initiatives for Boeing Missile and Space Division. And he worked on global nuclear spent fuel storage, logistics, feasibility studies, worked with Israel Aircraft Industries, amazing man. And also, you know, Dr. Edgar Mitchell, the sixth man on the moon.
I've interviewed him on this program a few times, yes.
Yes, and we're co-authoring a book. We did years ago, but it was blocked from being published, if you can imagine. And he's waiting in the wings to also help get this treaty signed. He co-authored it. And he has talked so much about high levels raising of consciousness, the evolutionary leap, and the revolution, really, in consciousness that is taking place now. And
he started the Synthetic Institute, which was a whole foundation into researching consciousness.
Yes, and that was founded, you know, he had an out-of-body experience in space and came back saying, I better study what this is all about. And so he went into
an epiphany by looking at the Earth. He had a spiritual revelation when he was coming back from the moon.
Yes. I mean, imagine this man working with these other men to co-author this treaty. It's absolutely brilliant. And finally, some of your listeners may also know the Honorable Paul Hellyer, the former Minister of Defense of Canada, who introduced a different treaty for us years ago and, of course, supports this one also to ban space-based weapons. And this is the updated version of it. And he and all of these men have gone public. Paul Hellyer, especially for as a former Minister of Defense, Canada again, he has gone public very strongly about the fact that UFOs are real and they're not balloons and they're not all of the other, you know, made up skepticism kind of stories that are spread around. And he also, like the rest of these gentlemen, talk about how we can save our planet's environment, heal ourselves. And he's an economic expert. He's written a number of books, too. Focused on the economic issue of how we can stimulate a new economy or not and go down. And so there's huge potential that each of these men represent and talk about, and they put it together in this treaty that now has been translated into several languages. And just today I received one in Turkish. I haven't posted it yet, by people sending them in translated so that they can give them to their nation state leaders and get
the UN
treaty signed into law.
No, I just have three questions based on what you said. First, is the secret government, shadow government, putting weapons in space in order to defend against the ETs? That's one question. The other question are, who are the nine countries that you're going to? And the third question is, why would this treaty be honored? So many treaties are signed, made law, and then, of course, broken. So the first question is, who's putting these weapons in space and why?
Sadly, my experience is that this weapons program, the one war after another, if you heard my Disclosure Project testimony, I talked about what Wernher von Braun, the father of rocketry, whose speeches I gave when he was dying of cancer. He was a corporate manager, or he was a vice president of Fairchild Industries when I was a corporate manager, and he transmitted speeches to me to give when he was too ill to go. And so I gave the talk on how these wars are generated, and in fact, which countries, which issues would be addressed to manipulate the minds of people to believe that we needed one enemy after another to be supported in terms of going to war against them until the last card, which would be the identification of the ETs. And that supposed enemy, which is another lie, as von Braun said, is based on a program in the United States. And so that's the part that's sad to me, that my experience is it emanates right from this country that I'm loving living in. I'm back here from trying to live outside of the country and realize this is one of the best places in the world that we could be. But those of us who are working on all kinds of vitally important issues need to keep doing that. But we need to, whatever issue we're working on, realize that one of the main reasons that these issues are not being funded is because in the United States, the war game is what's perpetuating the whole military-industrial complex survival. And that's why this treaty at this time in history is so important to get signed into law, and it will be signed into law internationally, because now is the time when we can transform, and consciousness wasn't evolved as much as it was in the past. It now, more and more people are educated. We didn't even have the technology spread around the world that we have now. We didn't have countries flying into space or astronauts, cosmonauts from different countries going into space until very recently in human history. So we have this chance now. It does emanate from this country, and you'll notice that our presidents, and now it's even worse than ever, go around the world seducing other countries into working on what they're calling missile defense. At the stage it is now, that means space-based weapons, which we're going to ban from being on celestial bodies or craft or any weapons from those positions that could be aimed at beings in space or on Earth, human or otherwise. So I see it as coming out of this country, and I find that to be extremely sad. But the good part about that is more and more people in this country are being educated about this war issue. Again, any issue you're connecting to and trying to help people or the environment or new energy programs with, they all end up at the war game. I mean, now they're talking about cutting out school lunches, you know, and different healthcare for the elderly to the children. This is pathetic. The environment being destroyed, the air, sea, land being destroyed, dolphins and penguins washing up on the shore, radiation being spread around the world. We must change this game. And that's why your last question, I'm skipping over to, that's why we're going to get this treaty signed. It is time for this change. And this is real. It was written by very credible people who crossed the revolving door game and know that this is the time to get this done. And it's really now or never, and we need help to get this done.
Right. I mean, what you said at first is that, yes, war is an industry. And in 1935, you know that speech by General Butler that said war is a racket, and every 20 years we must go to war in order to maintain the high level of economy.
Yes, I didn't get hired in the defense industry because I was a peace activist. And so I think there were a lot of people when I came out that thought I must be CIA, or maybe I was KGB in some circles because I was going to Russia. And, you know, maybe I was a Nazi lover because I worked with von Braun. I mean, none of that's true, of course, but we've been so carefully taught to not trust. And I really thought when I got out of the industry that I would go to the U.S. administration. They would hear what I had to say about transforming the war game. And, of course, that's not the way it worked because of what you just said, Alan. And so Now, however, if enough of us can get educated, I just sent to NASA and got the space spinoff books, the updates on the benefits of space technology and how they can be applied to solving these problems and what they're doing that's so exciting that could provide for us for a whole new marketplace. Look at the people out of work. You know, I'm in Oregon and I work with the homeless. I got my first responders degrees. You know, I started getting emergency degrees in case there is one. I think we need to back ourselves up and be as self-sustained as we are in case what we're doing doesn't work. But I also see this huge opportunity we all have.
What you're saying, the treaty, if it is signed by these nine countries, why would it be upheld if even the environmental treaties are, you know, negated and gone against? If corporations control the governments, which they seem to control in many, and not just here, but probably in the other major countries.
A couple of things. One, as you see, the whole world is occupying a different consciousness. They're looking for solutions. They don't know, most people, about the relationship of the space issue. In fact, most people in a lot of the movements would say, why are we even putting money into space? And it's a good question when there are so many problems on the Earth, until they start to realize what the benefits are. And I see whole audiences turn around when they hear them. But the fact of the matter is, to answer your question, this is the first time in history when we've had such incredible verification techniques. We can now apply monitoring, observation, information sharing techniques that are existing and forthcoming that are so clearly, so making it clear what's in space, which has to be registered, and we know everything that's in space. In fact, when I started traveling to Russia years ago, to the USSR, I worked with the scientists over there and came back with a list of joint ventures that they were willing to do, one of which turned out to be the Apollo-Soyuz link. And I found that around the world, people were already sharing information. Now we've got this very high technology that can see a golf ball in your window and can also mind control you if we don't stop this program from moving forward and turning it into a mind sharing, a mind connecting, a unified consciousness that in fact is taking place. And as von Braun would explain to me, technology is just an extension of the mind. So the mind wants to, and since we all have a DNA of being cosmos people, you know, we're all interconnected to the cosmos as well. And that information will soon start to come out too, our relationship to the other beings in the universes. We now have an enormous amount of new information and technology that can be applied to verifying arms agreements that we didn't have back in 67 when the Outer Space Treaty was signed, which only banned weapons of mass destruction. That's not even the weapons they're talking about putting into space right now. But also, we have a different enforcement mechanism. And the enforcement mechanism is our raised consciousness and our relationships around the world, what we've learned about people to respect and honor the different cultures and belief systems and not fight. I mean, we now know that we can get a divorce and beat each other up and try to take our belongings and so on. Or some people celebrate the divorce, the marriage divorce, and still remain to be friends. So we do evolve, and the new enforcement mechanism is based on that cooperation and collaboration. That's what's new, the verification and the enforcement techniques that didn't exist in the past, so we couldn't have arms agreements that would stick. And this one is the stick.
Yeah, no, I get it, and I think you're right. Then today's technology will help possibly ensure that a peace treaty like this could be backed up. But also, could you also talk a little bit about your work with Dr. Werner von Braun? Like, what kind of person was he? What was his spiritual beliefs? And how did you get to meet him and all that?
Oh, it's with pleasure. He, of course, many who worked with him and who actually know him or know of him see him as one of the greatest visionaries of our time. And he worked with Walt Disney, made videos that show what could be in space, and then it became a reality. and he gave me the assignment to prevent the weaponization of space. This is something that as a former sixth grade school teacher, child psychologist type, I never dreamed of getting into. But how I met him, I was actually teaching sixth grade in Arlandria near Alexandria, Virginia, where it was a very poor socioeconomic area. And my children one day said to me, let's get the F off the planet. And that's what they really wanted to do. It was a very depressed area where every time it rained, it flooded. And we'd have to move the children up to the highest land, which happened to be at McDonald's parking lot. It was really, really bad area. And so we decided to leave Earth. We set up our classroom like a spaceship, and it had every kind of learning center and every subject area. We wrote to world leaders as a project in actually learning how to write, and it hit the press. One of the parents that came to visit us called in some media, and it hit the press, and the article said, students studying on spaceship Earth, communicating with world leaders, they actually wrote a letter of what they wanted for the Earth that they could see from space for their future. And it was in the days of EEOC, equal opportunity, and women needed to be hired into the aerospace companies. Actually, they had to be hired into industries. They had to have women in certain positions. And that's really how I got in. I was invited to Fairchild Industries because that hit the press, and teachers started to communicate with Fairchild, who had launched an educational satellite. In those days, most of us didn't even know what a satellite was back in the early 70s. And I was called to Fairchild. I had never been to any other companies except a chocolate bar factory and a beer company on a field trip with my kids. And when I got there, I didn't realize I was being interviewed. I was, and I was introduced to Wernher von Braun, who at that time was dying of cancer in early 74. And I was brought in for a 10-minute meeting that lasted for a couple of hours. And he tapped his finger on the desk and said, you will come to Fairchild and you'll be here within 3 weeks. And you're going to hear that I'm dying, but I'm going to stay alive to tell you what the real space game is that you're pretending to be living and working in your classroom. And they're not going to close the door on you, a woman. He believed in that chivalry. And so he did. He taught me what the real game was. And I went to Fairchild. He was mesmerizing. He was totally a heartfelt man. This is a man who helped plan the escape to get out of Peenemünde from working under Hitler. And, of course, if you see pictures of him in videos, you know, lots of people will say, oh, he was a Nazi, terrible person. A lot, they might say that about me, too. I worked in a company I have a picture of myself hugging a model of an A-10 bomber airplane, and yet I'm a peace activist. So these are what we do in those jobs sometimes, and it's sad and a shame. But he did plan the escape when he told me about it. And I heard him being taped one time by another group, and I sat with him and I watched his eyes fill up with tears as he talked about what happened in Germany and, you know, how they planned the escape. And now they came to this country, and some of them went to Russia, these scientists, a few hundred that escaped. The ones that came here thought they were coming here, the land of the home and the free and the brave and all that. And yet they were called right back into work on missiles that they had just tried to get away from. And these men were rocket scientists, to answer your big question. They were not warriors. He was a heartfelt man. He had one of his very best friends was Jewish. So, you know, they were not doing a thing against the Jews and all of that. It was that time of war, where I also don't think a lot of the people, our young people, and even some of the older ones that go into wars, I don't think they go in because they hate those people in those countries. And some of them are brainwashed to think that they are our enemy. Mostly that's not true. And so that was his job. But this was a heartfelt man who had a vision of how we could live and work in space. And what he really wanted to do from the age of a young boy was travel into the universes to find out who we really are.
So because he is the father of rocketry, he understood a new technology, and he was probably in touch with some kind of higher intelligence in order to bring that through. Did he ever talk about that or the fact that ETs did exist? Did he mention that to you?
He made it very clear between the lines that he knew and they did, and that they were not hostile. And we never talked about it directly because these scientists were actually quite afraid to talk about most anything that they thought. there was a man, Dr. William Winterstein, who wrote a book, I have it right here, called The Secrets of the Space Age. William Winterstein, a lieutenant colonel, army retired, who wrote a book about these German scientists. And he hinted in this, too, that they knew a lot, that they were not warriors. They were Nazis because they were working in the Nazi regime, but they weren't really Nazis by heart and or intention. And in von Braun's case about the ET UFO issue, he made it very clear, as I said, that, of course, that's a reality. He knew a lot. He couldn't talk about it because of what he thought might happen to himself or his family, especially. He was very protective of his family. And, I got the clear picture. But in those days, I was so young and immature and kind of in – I was walking around in a almost numb state of being guided by him totally to enter into the arena of the revolving door, because out of his almost desperation, because he never knew when he would drop off, or as Timothy Leary would have said, deanimate. Timothy was one of his good friends, by the way. As they talked about this vision of outer space that they had for us humans to begin to recognize who we really are in the universes. That was more what he talked to me about, was the vision and what was possible and how to transform this deadly game that we're all obviously in, that many of us don't want to talk about or relate to. We think it's bad energy for ourselves, and we want to try to stay healthy and be positive. But he really went into both the negatives and positives. And I think what he knew about the UFOs gave him the lift and the energy to tune me in to the real need to ban space-based weapons, no matter what anybody's belief system was. And that's the kind of way he would say it to me. People have so many different belief systems. There's so much disinformation out there. And he would say the only way to get to the truth would be for us to be able to invite the off-planet cultures in and have this conversation. And he would say to me, you know, they're ready to come in. And as the ETs would say, there's no guarantee due to the human ego that we're ever going to allow them in safely, because there are so many self and corporate vested interests and belief systems and disinformation, misinformation spread around, even by so-called experts in these fields of UFOs, that he knew, no matter what the belief system was, that there is a reality, a truth related to who we are in the universes. And he would use that word universes before people were doing that to me, with me. So he knew a lot. And there are people out there that have made contact with me that said that they know that he was there when bodies were brought in. That kind of information has been presented to me. But I can only go by my own experience with him. He obviously knew. He knew that no matter what the belief systems are out there, if there are people who want weapons in space, either they've been brainwashed to think that there's some war going on or we need them to fight these so-called evil aliens, which is all lies, or we will, those of us who either can intuit or who have had experiences with extraterrestrial beings, and so we know that reality, or have seen craft and we know they didn't harm us, that they, yes, did experiments, but they're not anymore. Those of us who get all of this know that we shouldn't put weapons in space, and other people, and I mean space-based, because that's where it is feasible, possible to stop this game from proceeding.
Did he say that, you know, our enemies will first be the Nazis and the communists, and the final enemy that will be proposed or brought to would be the extraterrestrials that the government, the war industry, will make us think that they're our enemies? Did he say that?
Yes, that's what my testimony was, and that's how Dr. Greer and his wife Emily talked me into doing the Disclosure Project. I didn't really want to, so I sat over in a corner hiding behind Danny Sheehan and turned the lights away, so I hoped I wouldn't be in any photographs, but there I was testifying. And it was Stephen who suggested that this was a very important statement. I had been giving it for many years since von Braun died, and even while he was alive, that there is a pattern for why wars happen. One is that we have to dump the old weapons, test the new ones, and rationalize the budget for the next set of weapons. And to do that, to proceed with that industry, we have to have an enemy. So when I started in the industry, it was the Russians. In fact, that's why I ended up getting on a plane and going there. And I met with everybody except Andropov. That's how far back I go, who was the head of Russia at that time. And I got to meet with his attachés and military people, and they thought we were all cowboys and that I was a CIA agent. I thought that they were all KGB agents or, you know, whoever they might be over there. And it turned out we had all been just misinformed, and we ended up having cocktail parties and getting to know each other. And we realized, as von Braun did, because the people working in the space industry were already sharing information back and forth, either underground or soon after when they were able to, after the Cold War ended, supposedly ended. If you hear one of our candidates right now, you would think we're still in the Cold War. But in fact, we're friends all over the world in space. The cosmonauts have told me, by the way, that they can't even be enemies in space. It's too funny when they're floating around in zero gravity. And
looking at one planet, you know, it was Edgar Mitchell's thing. That was one united planet that had no division. And so it is ridiculous to think that we're separate.
Yes, space. And Rusty Schreiker's famous quote where he held his thumb up and saw no frames, no boundaries. He couldn't even see the Earth when he held his thumb over it. We're such a tiny little planet. But now there are people out there actually planning on, in fact, they've invested in travel. There are like 500 people I hear who have put about $20,000 down on a $200,000 trip for a few minutes in space to experience zero gravity in space and see the Earth from space. There are people building space hospitals. And schools and hotels and laboratories. I mean, the hotel one and the tourism business is really going to be a huge business. And I helped to I did organize the launch of Timothy Leary's Ashes into Space through the Celestis Company.
Fun.
Yes. I was his caregiver for the all-night shift. I was the all-night shift when he died. We had been friends since the 60s, and he was dying of cancer.
Another space adventurer, inner space.
Absolutely. And so we did. Celestis Company, which is one example of a space company that emerged, one of the first, launched the Ashes on that particular trip of Gene Roddenberry, of the founder of the Space University, which now they're talking about building in space, Todd Hawley. There are, Kraft Ericke was on that trip. He was one of the German scientists that came over, and he went to Rockwell when von Braun went to Fairchild. There were like five people on that launch that I knew. Jerry O'Neill, who founded the High Frontier Foundation. I'm sorry, that's wrong. He founded.
You mean their ashes were on that launch?
Yes, their ashes were all on that launch. And I followed it. This was the first launch. Now there have been several since then. There were, I think, 26 people, if I'm not mistaken, on board that ship, rather their ashes. And I followed it on this particular one. The rocket was strapped to the bottom of an airplane. It was launched from Vandenberg. And it was the most heartfelt, amazing memorial ceremony I've ever been to, because these are all people. There are booklets of these people who have been launched. Their ashes, cremated remains, have been launched into space. People who wanted to go into space or who had some cosmic message to give to people. So each one is in a memorial booklet. And I followed this particular one. The ashes were strapped to the rocket, and it was strapped underneath the plane. It went to Madrid. And then it turned out, this is a funny story, just a little digression. There, the king was launching a satellite, and Timothy was attracting too much press, and the king wanted to have the press follow his satellite. So we, who were involved with this launch of the ashes, were moved to the Canary Islands, which that's where the rocket ended up. And I ended up on a military base meeting the pilots of this plane who were fans of Timothy Leary. I got to go on the plane and see how it was all gutted. And then I watched the rocket go up. And it was really an emotional trip. And I could actually hear Timothy laughing when that rocket went up into space. And he sent out a press release, which I still have. And I'm starting to put a book together finally, because I can't answer the tens of thousands of emails I'm getting right now. And one of them is I'm going to put in the paper of the message that he wrote, that he had carved on the vial of the ashes that went up into space, that said, in one word, peace, love, light. And the next part was, you, me, one. That was his message. And the rest of the message was, ride the light into space with your friends where we will all meet again. And in that interview, I did the last interview with him, and before he deanimated, as he called it. And I said, who are we, Timothy? And because he had been experiencing the death experience before he actually left his body for good. And he said, we are the light. And I said, what's our purpose on this planet? And he said, to shine the light on others, ride the light into space where with your friends, where we will all meet again. And yeah, his message was always spiritual. And there again, here's another guy that got a bad rap and a reputation often, but really he was an educator. He was, he had several doctorates. He was more interested in spreading that peace message, just like Von Braun was.
I remember I saw him lecture, and there was an illustration of him riding his brain into space.
Yes, actually, there was a movie made of, they said his head had been cryogenically, it was frozen, but of course that wasn't true either. So, you know, there are a lot of misconceptions about some of these people. I think anyone who's on the front line can be ridiculed, especially if they're talking about this space issue, and even more if it's talking about the UFO, ET, cosmos culture, you know, whatever we want to call it, issue. And yet there is a truth that I'm looking forward to more than anything. And I want to share with you one secret that Dr. Jones just told me I can reveal on your show, that he and I both have been in contact with other beings. And so we've started really sharing our experiences. And this is really important, interesting. Those people who help get the ban on space-based weapons, we've both been told, will be invited officially to be on the front lines of at least one of these landings, which will take place all over the world when we have the celebration and the ban. The signatures are on this treaty. It gets signed, and that's what we want to go film and document for the sake of history. The nine world leaders signing the treaty, they take it to their parliament or Congress and they get it ratified. And then it goes to the UN Secretary General's office, which is the treaty depository. And it gets announced in the General Assembly, and it becomes world law. And that will also, by the way, answer one of your questions, put the squeeze on the United States, which isn't a stupid country. They're not stupid people in this revolving door complex, but they have those self-interests and that fear mechanism that's generated it, along with the greed and corruption mechanism that's all over the world. This is where consciousness shifts and changes. And we start to recognize that there is a new economy, a new security system, a new social system, a new environmental system, energy system that will come out of the ban of space-based weapons. And the consequences of not doing this, no matter what anybody's belief system is just unspeakable. And I mean, there's no question it's happened before that our generation or the next generation can be obliterated. And we don't want to face that reality or talk about negatives. But the fact is we're headed in that direction, or we're headed also in the direction of the raised consciousness that acknowledges the beings. And the big secret that we've been holding back for too long is that there are others besides us who have been told that we will be invited to be at the landing sites, just like in the movies. And there will be many. There are a lot of people around the world planning these sites and know that there will be more. But this will be an official landing announcement. And imagine the Imagine John Lennon song coming forward then, and we actually begin to live in peace and turn this back into the garden planet that it is meant to be in the universes. We can have that. And we're not talking about in 30 years. I've been doing this for almost 40 years. Now we're talking about in 2012 getting this treaty signed. So I really hope people will go to peaceandspace.com make contact with me. My email address is on there, spacetreaty@gmail.com. Please contribute everything you can. A lot of us were along the way threatened to be quiet. There are all kinds of weird things that have happened to us along the way, and we're certainly not giving up. We're now at the most exciting moment in history when we can get this done and change the whole game. We have musicians that have turned in music that I'm going to, it's now posted on that peaceandspace.com website. Pia Larson in Denmark, an American Indian, James Madhuwebbed, who also wrote a rock and roll song and took some of my voice messages out of different YouTubes that are out there. And Ben Zulu, Gypsy Zulu, these are people that either heard about this treaty through Facebook or through some other speech or word of mouth. And there's a lot of support for it. But on your show now, we're announcing for the first time that we are just beginning to raise the money to go to the 9 world leaders. This crew that you will read the biographies of are on that peaceandspace.com website. The treaty, as I mentioned, is in different languages. It's called the Outer Space Treaty, Outer Space Security and Development Treaty, now of 2012. And we're planning on having a big newspaper article go out around the world that says war is over. And we haven't seen that since Japan accepted the Big Four's terms. You know, we now have a chance to do that in our lifetime. We won't get another chance. This is it. And it's so important.
You say this is it. Is there a deadline? Is there a cutoff date? Or how much? I mean, or is it just that 2012 is this year of transformation?
Well, it is the year of transformation, but this is a great question. I didn't mention that in my lifetime, again, I've focused on this issue since the early 70s, I have never seen a more accelerated pace with the intention of weaponizing space as what's going on right now. And this is, it gives us, I could just give up. I mean, my husband would like for me to give up. He thinks it's hopeless and that there's not enough conscious people. My husband introduced the Disclosure Project. He's a retired actor and a scholar, and he's been right about a lot of things, unfortunately, the suffering and what's the destruction that's going on the planet. And he feels that it's hopeless, and I have a feeling a lot of people do. But what those of us on the website...
I think there's a lot of great people out there like you.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And I think it is now up to us. It's up to your listeners to contribute as much as you can. We will post a blog that will track us going to the 9 world leaders. We have contacts, and you asked that question, who are they? I don't want to mention them now. You know, there are a lot of vested interest in blocking this process, and that's why we need the most conscious people to help us. So far, we have not had any negativity. I think out of 25,000 emails I got in the last couple of years, I was reading every single one, and I've tried to answer them. I've only got one person out of all of those who said, yeah, but what about the evil aliens? All the rest of the people, it's amazing. I've never had this positive an experience.
So the world leaders, you're saying, the world leaders are people like Obama. Is that who you're talking about when you say the world leaders, leaders of government?
Well, we're skipping Obama because he is actually still supporting this ridiculous, expensive, too costly, dangerous, expensive, unnecessary, untestable, unworkable idea of space-based weapons. In the beginning, he did not support it, and now he's supporting this missile defense and trying to talk other countries into working on it. The Russians who, and the Chinese, by the way, wrote a treaty to ban weapons in space. Now they're talking about building their own system if the U.S. and those allies go and build one. No, this has to stop now. And we have, those are the other leaders that we're going to go to around the world. There are leaders who really know it's not in their best interest to work on this so-called missile defense. Can you imagine a shield stopping a suitcase bomb? I mean, this is so ridiculous. It's a joke, but it's a rubber crutch joke. It's not funny. And it's expensive. Like I said, it's too costly. We need the money to produce new energy projects and environmental healings and human healings and provide for new high technology and advanced education and stimulate the job market, not cut it down and aim it at wars and stop the budgets from being produced to the causes that we all know need to be funded. We're all competing for funds out there, including us, because we're trying to get money to go to 9 presidents, prime ministers, whoever the designated person is, kings, queens. We have identified some that we In fact, we're told by people at the UN that once the first nine start to sign on, that we will have more than 50% of the countries at the UN sign on. And so we don't have any doubt that we'll be able to get this signed, but we just have to get to the first nine, the first one. So
right.
That's what we're doing. And that's what we're going to film.
No, I really appreciate it. I think we have to wrap up, but so the best, when you say you want people to contribute money and anything else they can contribute to help make this happen?
Absolutely. I was just getting a note during our call that there's a photographer who said he'd like to contribute anything he could in the form of photography. We have documentarians who all they need are their expenses paid to go with us. They're not charging us any money. We're all volunteers. And we just need the money for the expenses of the travel, hotel, food, taxis to get
to go to these countries and meet the leaders, you're saying? That's where you need
exactly.
to go?
We are going to make appointments to go into the leaders' offices, and we're very excited about it, and educate them and have them sign the treaty, present it to their Congress parliamentarians, get it signed into law. And to do it, because of what you so intelligently brought up, the timing, and thank you for reminding me to mention this, because the program is so accelerating to weaponize space, we have to act quickly, and that's why we're doing it in this time period. As quickly as we can, we're packed, ready to get on the planes, and we're announcing it on your show that now on the website, there's a PayPal credit card button, there's an address that you could also send it to. Again, it's a 501c3 tax exempt if you're in this country. If you're out, we're taking it in any currency. We need as much money as we can possibly get, and it will only be spent on getting this treaty signed into law.
Thank you, Carol. Thank you for all the work you're doing. This can change our planet and the consciousness that, you know, that we've been living in of fear and of war and of lack. I mean, this is our time of evolution, and I think this is definitely a big part of it. So
yes, I think it's the pivotal part of it too, Alan. I don't think my issue is the animal rights issues, all of them. I would probably be living with the gorillas right now and maybe the elephants. But my issue that I focused on my whole life was the orphans, the children, and there are over 500 million that we know of now we need to get homes for. And the disease that's going around the world, the healing, and the people. We have a counselor, Tamsin Williams, in the UK that's a healer, and a couple of media people who worked with us from the beginning, Hillary Ramo, that they're all concerned about healing from all levels. And in the cosmos, when the beings come, of course, they've traveled for distances, and we need to learn how they did that. They certainly weren't using fossil fuels, and they've
right.
stayed healthy enough in their different dimensional bodies to get here. We need to learn about that so we stop speculating and we learn the truth. And so
right.
this is a pivotal time. It's a pivotal issue. This treaty is, as far as I can see, the milestone document of our time. You know, we have the declarations, the constitutions, the Declaration of Human Rights. We have a lot of very important documents
right.
through history, but I don't know of anyone that's more important than this. And I really hope people read it, because the end part of it is kind of legalese, but it tells a story with talking points. And we need mostly just the financial donations to get there. We've got these men that support you and I and all of us who don't want space-based weapons. And that's a pivotal issue right there that will, as you're saying, transform the entire old game and consciousness and help those of us who are ready to raise it. People have written to me that said when they read the treaty, something was tapped in them and they cried or got chills. And other people got it right away and got us to this point where we just, a lady, Leah Shanley in Australia, actually posted the website for us, and it's ready to go. So we're just beginning this new part of the last card, the journey. And thank you so much for inviting me on the show and for me to be able to introduce it to your listeners. I will write back to every single person that writes to me, and Scott Jones will send thank you notes. That ought to be a collector's item for the people that donate.
Okay. I will post this on my website as well, newrealities.com. And I've been talking to Carol Rosen, Peace in Space, peaceinspace.com, Treaties to Ban Weapons from Outer Space. Her email is spacetreaty@gmail.com, and she's definitely open for contact, and people can contribute to this idea of banning.
banning weapons from outer space and welcoming our space family to planet Earth. That's
and
really
then
the
we will have peace on Earth as there is in space. And that's really a huge pivotal moment that we can have in 2012, this transformational time.
Right. Heaven on Earth as it is. It's in Earth as it is in heaven, right, or something like
really,
that.
Really, really, and it's time for us to do it right now. So we have this moment in time. Let's get it done.
Thank you, Carol. Thanks so much for being a guest here on New Realities. I'm Alan Steinfeld, and you can reach me at newrealities@earthlink.net and check my website, newrealities.com. Thanks for listening today.
And peace and love to all. Thank you.
Waking up in the middle of my life, nothing's what it seems. I feel the fire come alive. Feel the fire
in the fire
come alive.
In the fire.